The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
This session is about managing chaos, and I think we will redeem what extra couple of minutes we can. And at this point, I think introductions as to who everybody is are kind of a moot point. So with that, without further ado, Jan, the floor is yours.
For coming and being here and being a part of this workshop. I want to do this as a little more informal and to hear from you some of the things that you might have questions about. You've been hearing my story for a while now, and two of the things that I dealt with for years as a homeschool mom, and I hear it over and over and over, is fear and chaos. That I would love to tell you that you're not going to have to do that, that you can get a handle on this and it's going to all be just fine. It is going to all be just fine. I can tell you that. But as long until the Lord throws Satan into the pit and locks that door, there's going to be fear because he is the liar. And he knows your vulnerable point and he doesn't want you to homeschool your children because homeschooling is discipling. And you're going to have more time, if you're homeschooling your children, to teach and to train and to nurture their heart for God. You know, he has a much better chance of getting at them if he can take them out of your home. So he is going to accuse you of all the worst things about you. And you're going to say, that's true. I shouldn't homeschool because of that. I'm terrible at this, that, or the other. Whatever it is that's your greatest weaknesses, he knows what those are, and he's going to accuse you of those things. And you're going to believe it because you know those things are true. But what you've got to know is that God also has given you strengths. So let's talk. I want you to think, what is it that's causing you to be afraid? Because it changes with different seasons in your life. And so we're going to start off by talking about some of those things before we get to the chaos part. Let's ask the Lord to just pull our hearts together here. Dear Jesus, we thank you for this last hour. And I pray, God, that even as the world starts to pour into our hearts and our minds of the multitude of things that we have to do the rest of the day and picking up the children and just any feelings of being overwhelmed with all the things that they want to do differently or to do better. Father, I pray that in this moment that you would calm our hearts, that God, you would help us to hone in on those things that are most relevant to the needs that are in this room. And God, that you would just make me attuned to your spirit, and that these women would open their hearts to me, and that your spirit would fall and administer grace and peace and hope, because you are the God of glory, Father, and that you give grace to those who are in need. And we ask you this moment for grace and for peace and for hope. In Jesus' name, amen. So I welcome you, ladies. Y'all come on up close. We want to talk about things. And you've already heard my story. For those of you who didn't, I started off excited about homeschooling and just so pumped to be able to give my children a childhood that was free, that we could be outside, that they could have the freedom to learn and grow in innovative ways. And I thought, I can do this, you know. I had, before we left Kentucky, my husband was doing medical training at University of Kentucky in Lexington. And before we left there to move back home to Louisiana, they started a small Christian school. And I ordered 3 years of the same curriculum that they were using at this Christian school, because at that time, you could not order any curriculum as a homeschooler. And so I ordered that curriculum, and it was literature based. And we started off without me trying to do all that they had said to do. But kind of like Zan, I got frustrated because Caleb, instead of following the lesson, he would just read it. because he was the one that read easily and was so smart. And so I put the curriculum away, and we did 100 easy, how to read, and 100 easy lessons that was available. And before long, he was just flying through it, and that was a lot easier to use. So, you know, we still went back, and he read all the little readers that came along, and the notebooks were still empty to this day. I still have that curriculum to this day that I keep thinking that maybe one of the grandchildren will fill in all those blanks. But we read the books. So, but as they got older, I got more fearful. And was sure that because I wanted so much to be able to give them the world and all the knowledge therein, and that I couldn't accomplish all that I wanted, I was sure that I wasn't doing enough. And so a friend of mine, I played the piano at church, and she played the organ, and she was over the gifted in learning program through our parish. And, you know, Caleb had made 100 on his first 2 or 3 years of test. And I just thought, this is a joke, you know, that. And she said, well, not everybody makes 100 on these tests. And she said, maybe he's just gifted and you should have him tested. And I thought, okay, well, we'll have him tested. Well, somehow in moving to Kentucky and back, I had lost his birth certificate. And I hadn't ordered one, so I hadn't registered with the state. And when I called to the parish to see about getting them my older two tested, because she said that they didn't have to go into school, they could just do an hour of gifted each day. Long story short, I was not registered with the state. There weren't even homeschoolers hardly, but there was a law. We were one of the first states in America. Louisiana, we're always last in everything, but we were one of the first states that passed a homeschool law. So unlike Zan, I was left completely alone, and we had none of those struggles that they did, because in 83, our law was passed. So they were years later before it became legal in North Carolina, and it was a miracle. That's a whole separate story of our law being passed. We still have the same law that passed in 83. And so, but instead of them saying that it would take months for them to test my children, when they found out that I was not registered with the state and they had no record of these children, she called me right back from the local office of our school board and said, these are search children. You're going to have to bring them in and get them tested. And I said, great, that's what I wanted to do. And so instead of waiting months before they could test them, they needed to be tested that week. So I took them in, and that lady was saying, how long each day do you do school? What do you use when you do school with these kids? And on down the list. So they took both my oldest two back and tested them. And they came out and they said, how long every day do you teach these kids? What are you using to teach these kids? Because they just, you know, tested very high. Now, we didn't test the third one. I was putting them in the gifted so I could give attention to the one that still could not read at age 7. And so we were successful, even though I was fearful that I wasn't doing enough. And as the years passed, I began to be afraid that I was really going to mess them up. We had gotten to 8th grade and things were so far so good, and I was just sure that I was going to mess things up. And so I kind of hit a wall of fear and began to believe the lie. And you know, everybody in town was talking about my kids, so they say, that the teachers at the academy felt so sorry for my daughter because she couldn't be a cheerleader at the high school. She wasn't even going to get a chance. And those poor boys couldn't play basketball. And they couldn't do this and they couldn't do that. Forget all the things that they were doing. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to just cave in to what everybody thinks I should do and consider doing that. And I talked to Roger and I said, I think that they need to go to school. I'm afraid that I'm going to mess them up for sure. And he said, no. If you were to die tomorrow, I would quit my day job and I would stay home and homeschool these kids and do ER work on the weekend because I love our children. I love the fruit that I see in our family culture. I like what I see happening. And for sure, we couldn't put Rodney in school because he would be the ringleader of, you know, he would just be a jokester and a clown and have a big time and fail everything. He said, we just cannot do this. And so he really kicked in. And for the first time since we started homeschooling, we made the outright commitment that, Lord, this really isn't about us and what's convenient for us, what's working for our family. But we are going to homeschool, and we're in this for the long haul, and we're going to trust you for the results, good, bad, or ugly. And I told the kids, I had a little powwow, kind of a come-to-Jesus meeting, and I said, I would love for y'all to have a wonderful teacher. I would love for you to have this amazing lady be your teacher. But guess what? God gave you to me, and you are stuck with me. So y'all just need to suck it up, because Daddy said we had to do this, and we're doing this, because I'm gonna yield to that. I mean, I wanted to do it in my heart of hearts, but my fear was greater than my confidence. But after that, I just said, we're doing this. We're in this. So here we go. And I pray that maybe this weekend even, God has given you the confidence to say, we're doing this. I'm in this. I'm believing you, Lord, for my children, and that you gave me these children, and you're going to make me enough. And where I'm not enough, you're going to provide someone else to fill in what is needed, because you don't have to do every single thing. You can use, like we did, resources. I've never had a foreign language in my life, but my children can speak other languages. I still don't know anything about it. I was cooking supper while they were doing, you know, class. My kids can do more than I can do in almost every area of life, except for love God and love people. You can do those things too. So this is our grandchild. She's the youngest. Her name is Sophia, and she's full of life. One of the fun things about your kids after they're grown is that you get to watch them raise their children, and God is great. You know how he says, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. Hallelujah. I told you that my mother died when I was 18, so I have a few pictures that are really special to me. And one day I came in, and one of those pictures that was not in a frame had these two holes in her eyeballs. He just about had holes in his bottom. But, I just said, why would you do this? And he said, oh, I thought that looked cool. And one day, when this same son's child was two and I came to visit, he met me at the door and he said, Mom, I need to show you something. And we went to the back and he had a picture of his grandmother that was very special to him. And guess what was missing? I promise you, I had not told that two-year-old that story. I had not. And that grandmother's eyeballs were missing. So, you fill in these blanks. When we're comparing ourselves to other, what do we compare ourselves to? Their strengths. When you're looking at Instagram, you look at somebody else, you know, and you want to be outside and you've got 10 feet of snow out your door and you're looking at somebody down in the south and they're taking hikes and they're doing all these things that you wish you could be doing in the middle of winter that are just not feasible unless you have on snowshoes or a snow plow or something. And it's, you're comparing to somebody, your weaknesses to somebody else's strengths. Comparison will make you fearful. We are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works that he prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That's true for us as well as for our children. I remember one day after my children were mostly grown that I met a friend of mine that I had known years before from a homeschool conference like this, that you meet somebody and you run into each other later. And I think I still had one in high school. And I was asking her what all they were doing, and she said they had just gotten back from the National Science Fair competition and that her son had won second place. And I said, oh, that is so awesome. And immediately, guilt and shame and heaping on, because we never did science fair. I meant to. I wanted to. I thought that sounded really cool. My husband does science, but we never once even started a science fair project. Well, I had Eagle Scouts. Does that count? But, you know, don't do that. If she could look at my children and what they did and said, oh, we never did any of that. So you're not going to get it all done. Don't compare your weaknesses to someone else's strength. Walk in the way that God has called you to walk. The grace in which we stand, and we exult in the hope of the glory of God. Hang on to your hope. Do what God has called you to do with your children. And by the grace of God, I am what I am. You're that mom. You have strengths and you have weaknesses. And that's why we're going to talk about some of the chaos part, because I'm chaos. I have a lot of fun, but it's a little bit chaotic. And I had to develop systems, you know, because there's just stuff. I don't care how many, you know, we've already talked about books. Our children love books, and after they had all gotten married and finally bought homes of their own, I went through and I said, now y'all are going to all be coming back, and there is not room in anybody's upstairs room for me to have a nursing chair for your wife. So that you got to get rid of some of these books that you've been buying and take them to your house. So we had to clean house, because there's just clutter that accumulates when you love things and books and toys and stuff. So we're going to talk about some systems, but I first want to talk about, what are some of the things that cause you to be afraid? Anybody? I'll speak up and I'll say it for you. And let's address some of these issues. Let's just do some popcorn brainstorming, okay? Just call out an idea. Anybody? What's a fear that you have? Help? Health. Good one. We'll talk about that. Health. Another fear. I'm sorry. You first. You first.
Not being enough.
Not being enough. That's a status quo fear. Okay, culture, the world culture. What they say you should do, like me, you know, my poor daughter couldn't be a cheerleader. So what's another one? They're going to grow up and blame us. That is a definite fear. That's right. Anybody have something else? Explaining salvation. Yeah, let's talk about that.
The fear that they'll grow up and not get along with each other.
That they'll grow up and not get along. Do they not get along perfectly now? Yeah, that's important. That's worth working on, so that they will grow up and get along together. Somebody else?
Government.
The government. Yeah. So today, and for many years in the Manitoba area, y'all have had freedom. In fact, more freedom than some of the people in the States. So the government may change. The government can come and go, and that freedom may change. But how much can you do about that? Absolutely nothing, for the most part. So that's something that can be a fear, because, I mean, you know, especially out of the last 2.5 years, it's been pretty scary. The kind of things that happen that we think, this would never happen, and it happened. And then how many things happened, how much was based on truth? and how much was the manipulation, you know, that was preparing us for what's to come. So that fear is legitimate. It is. But it's not something we can do anything about. So, you know, and the same thing with health. We can take some steps, and one of the things that I would talk about is take the steps you can to keep yourself healthy, that adjust your diet. Even if the kids don't eat exactly what you eat, adjust your diet to where you eat healthy. Be careful to not eat too much. When I had 3 teenage boys at home, I gained so much weight because I was eating a whole lot less than they were, but I was still eating way too much. And things kind of got out of control for me then. This fat that you see, this is not baby fat. This is just me not taking care of myself during a time period that I thought I was kind of taking it for the team, for not exercising or things that I enjoyed. Don't do that. That's one thing I look back and say, I would do that differently. I would continue to exercise, whether it was taking one child at a time on a walk with me and I just took a shorter distance and made a shorter loop and would pick up the next child, you know, and just check in on things. That's something I would do different. But I have known a lot of women that did not have good health, that had chronic illness, that they still homeschooled and God took care of them, that had horrible pregnancies where they were in bed for 9 months with each pregnancy and had 8 children, and that those children are now all high school and above. And it was a blip on the radar, whereas 9 months of being in the bed can seem overwhelming. God knows that. I'm sorry. Could somebody get me some water? Thank you. In the kitchen, they should have that. So health is another concern. Not being enough. I'm just going to be here to tell you, you're not enough. Just give it up. You're not enough. But God is. You do not have to be perfect. You do not have to know it all. Thank you, ma'am. Somebody got me one. God will show you resources, like with me. No foreign language. Still no foreign language. But kids that, you know, that have learned multiple languages. Y'all may have to talk. I'm sorry. So being afraid that you're not enough is just something that you could have to yield to the Lord and accept in humility. You are not enough. But God is sufficient. And in your weakness, He will be made strong. So in essence, by yourself you're not. But if you would look to Him and depend on Him, that's right where He wants you. In fact, with Gideon, He made them keep sending men home. Because He wants you to be in a place of dependence on Him. He wants to prove Himself strong. When they came out of Egypt, the first thing they did, they were following the fire by night and the cloud by day. And God led them straight 3 days into the wilderness to a place where there was no water. Is water important? They needed water. Your kids need certain academic things to follow along with life. Foreign language, that was a requirement from our government. God knows what your children need. And He puts you in a place where you cry out to Him in dependence to say, God, you provide. And then miraculously, He's going to provide, just like He did for them. At first, they grumbled and complained and said, brought us out here in the wilderness to die. You know, sometimes your kids think they're going to die. You won't let us go to school. You won't let us do this. And you're making us do this. And we're just going to all grumble, grumble, die. Sometimes you just need to find a big stick. That's what God said. See that big stick? See that tree? Throw it in the water. You pick it up. Throw it in the water. See that big stick in your hand? Hit that rock. And what happened? The water was made sweet, and there was water from the rock. The good news, ladies, is you have water in the rock because the rock was Christ. He's still with you. And it was God's will for them to go 3 days into the wilderness to a place where the water was bitter. Just like for you, He's leading you to a place where there is no water that makes you cry out to Him in trust and in faith. He did that not just once, but three times. Sometimes He leads you back around the same path to see if you're learning the lesson of trusting Him and crying out. Are you still dealing with some of the same-o? It's time to trust God with some of these fears. And He will provide the way. The standard gets higher. First they had to throw the log, the big stick, into the water for the water to become sweet. The next time Moses struck the rock, and the final time He told Moses to do what? Speak to the rock. But Moses was mad. So sometimes, you know, we're learning and we're growing, and God is way more concerned about your holiness than your happiness, Mom. And He's going to do what it takes for you to learn and grow dependence on Him so that your children can get independent from you. What's another fear that we talked about? Not being enough, health, the world. Yeah, the world is a scary place. And they're coming after your children. You know, I've read articles before about certain people that were rock stars and others saying they're literally coming after your children. They want your children to hear their music and to do their thing. So balancing the freedom that we have in Christ with the ways of the world, and, you know, we can't all just hide. They have to learn to function within the world and the world systems. So, you know, even though the internet is a scary place, they need to learn to navigate that. While they're under our tutelage and insight, they have to learn to live in the world and not be of the world. So we've got to get out and do things with people. And we don't need to live in fear, because He says, greater is He who is in you than he who is in the world. What was another thing that we talked about? Fear. Not enough time. Let's address that. Again, just like you're not enough, you do not have enough time to cover it all. So just give it up. Be faithful. Be faithful with the time that you're given. And your children are going to later come back and accuse you of not doing something. I had that happen with one of mine. You know, that boy I've been telling you about that was a challenger, the skateboarder, and that couldn't read well. And we would do, it was hard for him. It was hard for him from the beginning to the end academically. Other things were easy, but academics were hard. And we keep trying to push in as much as we can get in the little windows that they give us. And you know what I'm talking about, where you have those teachable moments where maybe he had been outside doing 50 kick flips in a row till he got it right. Then he'd come in and he'd sit down and he'd go, we need to do school. And I would say, okay. And we would do school as long as we could. I used videos with him. I used computer programs. I used all kinds of things to kind of squeeze it in. And then it would be like a switch would go off, and I could have kept talking, wah, 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 wah. And he would have just been out. You know, he was gone. He was done. And so you may as well say, okay, go get on your skateboard. And I would do the next thing, you know, because he was only available emotionally, mentally, for a period of time, and then he was done. And I just was trying to be faithful with what God gave me through that. So that same child later came back to me after going to Summit, which it's a worldview training that's available. It's in Colorado and in North Carolina. And it's a biblical worldview training camp for college kids. And he went one summer. The older two were leaders at this training. And he went, and he was excited. He was following the Lord. He was. But he had not read all the worldview books that the older two had read and that the younger one read, because he couldn't read. He could read, but not that. And he came home and was talking to me, and he said, "Have you ever heard of some theological question?" And I said, "Sure." And I started talking to him about it, and he said, "Well, why didn't you ever teach me about that?" And I said, "Because you never ask about it. And you weren't interested in it. You weren't ready to hear about this. But your father and I would love to talk with you concerning this topic." And he said, "Well, let's talk about it tonight after supper." And I said, "Okay, let's talk about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts." And he was surprised that we had heard of that stuff. And I said, "Rodney, you were not available emotionally or mentally or spiritually. You were not at the place, you know, that you are now at 20. You were not there at 16. But God's still here, and he's still teaching you and training you and helping you to learn and grow. He's now reading some of the books that we read aloud as a family. He's kind of reading and listening on audiobook to some of these things that are on our list that we read, because he doesn't remember those things. He had an eardrum replacement when he was in the fifth grade. And before that, he didn't hear a lot. His ENT, ear, nose, and throat doctor, had told me that if this young man can hear when he's 16, we will have done our job well. So if he had been in school, do you think he'd have been hearing what they were saying? No. He would have been a mess, I'm telling you. But yet he accused me and said, "If you would just let me go to the academy, I could read, because all of those kids that go to the academy, they read." And I thought, boy, I'd love to send you to the academy. So they're going to accuse you. They're not going to understand the choices that you make. But you need to be right before the Lord. And if you know that you're doing the best that you can do before the Lord today with who you are, and that he's the one that's called you to do it, and that your husband and you have agreed this is what you're doing, then you're only accountable to give your best. Should you give your best? Absolutely. Your kids are worth your every effort. You'll get to enjoy them the rest of your life. They're going to be raising your grandchildren. You want to do a good job. You want to give them your all. They're worth negating a lot of things. Girls, there is time after homeschooling for you to do a lot of things. When ours graduated, I had always said when I grew up, I wanted to be in the garden club. And so I got invited to join the garden club, and I went to this activity. And long story short, I became the state tour chairman. And I thought Roger would say, "No way, we just got out of a lot of responsibilities. We're not taking on anything new." But he knew that I was used to blowing and going with these kids, and he was kind of worried about me in this little bitty town. And he said, "I think that you would do a great job with that." And so I became the state tour chairman for Garden Club, which meant I had to plan two trips a year to take and recruit women to go on these trips, and they'd pay an extra $100 as a fundraiser. So we had some fun times. We went to beautiful gardens around the world for 6 or 8 years before I started having a lot of grandchildren and speaking and things like this. I was in a jazz band. After the kids graduated, the person who had played for an area-wide jazz group, a big band group, they asked me to play. I'd never heard of them. And I just had a lot of fun. There's life after homeschooling. There is. There's time for you to do some of those things in the future. Give your children your all. And then trust God with the results. And don't worry about they're going to come back and say that you've ruined them or that you didn't cover this or that. That's God's job. Be faithful to do the best you can do today and trust God for the rest. Did we not cover some of those other things? What's our time? I don't see. I'm used to that clock in the big area. Okay, great.
And about the
Oh, yeah, relationships. Now that's worth camping out on for a minute. Have you noticed that no matter how much they fight, if one of the children goes to somewhere else for a day or two, they miss each other. They're like missing that brother that they fight with all the time. So there's that balance between not allowing them to hurt each other and setting some rules. If you've got a bunch of boys, you had like four or five boys that, you know, one, boys play differently. You might think they're not getting along and they're having a blast wrestling all over the floor. You know, that might look like fighting to you and they're playing, they're having fun. Set some stipulations that when somebody says enough or, you know, uncle, whatever it is, that when they say that, that it stops. And they learn to respect that. They learn to set some parameters on the getting along, but always treat each other with honor and respect. Don't allow name calling. Don't allow talking smack or whatever in a wrongful sense. That the things that come out of their mouths toward one another is important. And in terms of the slapping and hitting, and now you have play punching and you have hurting one another. But in anger, when they're wanting to hurt one another, that's not allowed. So I was from a family of girls, and we slapped and scratched and bit, and it was terrible. It was terrible. And I remember one time when I was about 15, because my sister was driving, and she was 2 years old. Maybe I was 14, and she was 16, because we had just started going independently away from home in the car together. And she pulled the car over, and we had a slap fit. And I remember afterwards, I just said, Lord, show me how for it to not be that way with my younger sister, who was 3 years younger than me. I am never going to allow this in my household. So I was bound and determined that they were not going to be hitting. That wasn't going to be allowed. You know, one day she threw a brush at me and hit me in the back of the head and broke my mother's favorite brush. And you know what? Mama wasn't upset that she threw the brush. She was upset that it broke on my head. Don't allow that in your home. But teach them how to resolve conflict. And that's going to be a real pain in the behind for you. Because it's going to take a lot of time and energy. Because they don't know how to resolve conflict. And if you don't know how, learn. But one thing is that it's identifying their feelings. And let them learn, why did I want to hit you or bite you or whatever it was that they did? What was I feeling? I'm angry. I'm jealous. I'm hurt. I'm frustrated. When you did this, this is how I felt. And help them identify that and to say it out loud. Give them words to do it. There's a list called Soul Words that we had on our refrigerator from How We Love. It's from your family of origin. It's the Yurkovits. It's really a marriage book. But it talks about soul words, learning to identify your emotion and to handle your emotions and give words to your emotions. Because some families, emotions are not allowed. You can't feel, you can't express, you can't say. Everybody's just happy. Be happy. That doesn't work. You need to identify why you're mad, what's causing you to feel bad, that caused you to hit them. And then we called it family court, and we did it a lot. And so they would back and forth, and everything would stop. You know, the little one would read, the middle one, because it started with the older two when they were very small. And I would make them stand there seething at one another and say, what were you feeling? How could you have handled it differently? And they would have to actually talk to the other person. And then, you know, not just say you're sorry, sorry. And then hug each other and go on. No, they need to figure out what's going on in their hearts and in their spirits, and to make them verbally back and forth come up with a solution that instead of just jerking that toy from me, you could have asked or you could have waited until I was through with it. Teaching them to express their needs and their wants and their frustrations in words to one another back and forth, and that, you know, honestly, I'm not saying this is right, but when they were little and they hit, then if you know, then I would give them a hard whop. If they bit, I would bite. If they did whatever it was, pulling hair, then I would pull their hair. And I would say, this is real. This is pain. This is not effective. And I would make them use words. But I had a zero tolerance for hitting, slapping, biting, kicking, any of that in the home. So, but I also took a lot of time training them how to use words to express frustration and to helping them learn healthy ways of resolving conflict. And, you know, my sister and I that fought so badly, the one that was just above me, and she said so many hurtful things to me, that is something that we've had to work through as adults. And it can be done, but it takes a lot of commitment. And some of those things really never go away. Some of those feelings of pain and hurt when we were trying out for cheerleader, and I remember her as a cheerleader, you know, 2 years ahead of me on the other end of the gym saying, look at Jan, she's so spastic. And I remembered those words and how I felt of my sister making fun of me. So teach them to speak words of blessing in your home. And it starts when they're little. But if you haven't been doing that, it's never too late to start training them how to love one another and accept one another. That's a biggie. But you can do a lot about that by forming healthy, positive relationships and allowing acceptance to take root. Help them understand each other. My sister and I were two totally, there are four of us. And did you know there are four different personality temperaments? We are those four temperaments. And if I had understood that as a teenager, I would have recognized why we valued different things. You know, and I'm choleric, and my sister that I didn't get along with, she's melancholy. She's very sensitive. I was brazen. And she's very, you know, so things that she valued, I didn't. And for me, she had so much talent that she didn't take advantage of. And I didn't respect her. We didn't respect one another because we didn't see each other's strengths. We just saw their weaknesses. So teach them about their temperament. Teach them about each other's love language and help them to learn to communicate love in a way that other child receives love. So you can do that as parents with your children, and that's how you teach them how to get along. Okay? And so then that fear, when you see that they're friends and have lots of positive, healthy family activities that you do together where they have good memories of good times together, but that's built on trust and respect, and you build that in. Let's get to some of these other things. So let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Okay, an investment early on. We've talked about some of this. You invest early in these. That's the exercise. Let me go back to this. In those first 5 years is where you invest heavily. It's constant training, constant input, and meeting needs on your part. And yet, when they get to the teenage years, I promise you, Mama, the investment that you've made will begin to pay off. That it will come, even if it's later than you think. Don't give up at 13 and 14. No. They're not quite there yet. Keep hanging in there. Keep loving. Keep sitting tight and holding them close, giving them, affirming them positive. And it's amazing. It's kind of like when they hit five and suddenly, or three, and they stop getting spankings five times a day, and they're just pretty, you know, it's just like, oh, you're pleasant. I like you, you know? It happens again at about age 15. They're like, hello, Mom, I'm back. And you're like, oh, yay, let's do life together, you know, instead of go to your room. So don't give up on them. They're going to get there. So the investment, this is a long-term investment. And don't give up before you see the dividends and go make a withdrawal and send them to school. Don't give up exercise. Have some friends that you can talk to, because you're still going to have low moments. Don't do it alone. I hear that y'all can get pretty lonely in the winter here. Have somebody you can call and get together with. So good news is hopefully it's going to be easier next year to get together with people. They'll even let them come in your front yard. Travel together with your husband. Make sure you're on the same team together. Invest in that relationship. The early years, establish authority. We've seen that. All of life is school, but get organized. Now, yesterday, there was a whole room full in here during her talk on chaos. So I'm just going to hit a few of these things, and it's not to insult you. But when I was 33 and I went and learned some of these principles, I needed to learn them. It was new to me, just in case. Okay, a place for everything and everything in its place. Duh. But when you're not a systems person like me, you have to make rules for yourself. And this is where my purse goes. In my purse, there's this little hook, and that's where my keys go. And I can't just drop my keys. They have to go on that hook. And my purse has to go in that spot. Because otherwise, guess what? You spend a lot of time looking for stuff. And it's aggravating. Not only to you, but it's really aggravating to your children. Mom, where's your purse? Because you can't leave without those keys. I don't care if you have to put the key in the ignition anymore. You still have to have the key in the car. Don't let it leave your hand until it gets to its home. Now, that's hard for me. I was the teenager that had the whole floor covered with clothes. You know? Duh, do you realize it's easy? It's just as easy to hang it up the first time as it is later. You just, even now, I will take something off and my hands will be shaking just wanting to drop it and go on to the next thing. I got things to do. I'm cleric. Let's go, let's go, let's go. No, hang it up. Don't let it leave its hand until it reaches your home. When you've got a lot of little ones, then you have grandparents like us that like to give toys, even educational toys, or maybe parent grandparents on both sides. Rotate your children's toys. Put them in storage bins, similar things, you know. They don't need 50 stuffed animals in their room. Separate them. And yet somebody might be offended if you just give it away. Some of you don't have no problem. Get it away. Give it away. You can at least rotate it so that your kids every month have a new bin of toys to play with. You put some away, and it reduces chaos in your home. And then your kids are like, oh, I love this. I haven't had this in 2 months. If you've got 8 kids, you know, sometimes you need to reduce chaos because you, instead of having 8 cups on the counter, there's 50 cups on the counter at the end of the day. That ain't necessary. Give them a cup that's their cup, whether it's a particular color or a particular style. You know, I'm a home ec major. I'm all about setting a pretty table, but it's not nearly as important as reducing chaos in your family. And so if you need to give them a specific color of cup or plate or towel so that when all the towels are on the floor, you go, I know who left this towel down. Give them their own towel set, so that they are responsible to make sure that their towel is hung up, or maybe it goes to their room. And a curriculum is your tool, not your master. I want to go back to a few other little things that I've learned along the way. You have those long flat bins that you can put under the bed, that fit under the bed. Utilize that space for something besides dust bunnies. You can put rice or beans, all kinds of things in those bins, so that if you've got toddlers that you need to entertain while you're doing school with the older ones, they can do cups and pour. There's all kinds of things you can do for very inexpensive that stores in a bin under your bed or under a bed or under something that you can pull out and utilize. You put down a shower curtain is your friend. So a clear shower curtain that you can put down. You can get them at the dollar store for almost nothing. And then you put that down, and if you're painting, put that over your table. And other times you might use a sheet under your Legos. When your Legos get pulled out, you have a sheet that's in that Lego box that the Legos get dumped, and they can play and create all kinds of things. They start out doing the little box, but then you have 100 of those little boxes all put into a bin, and they create all kinds of new things that are not in the picture. But it's painful to step on Legos. So it's better if you have it on a sheet, you know, and if they're building Legos while you're reading aloud or whatever it is that you're doing as a family, then you can pick up that sheet and drop it in that box and put the lid on it and store it. So come up with some systems. And speaking of sheets, every bed in your house needs two sets of sheets, especially the children, because not only do they wet in their bed, but they wet in yours sometimes. Or they throw up. Before our kid, our oldest, had his tonsils taken out, he threw up so much. Oh my goodness. He had a sensitive gag reflex, and he would just throw up. He would wake up. I didn't realize it was because he had sleep apnea and it was closing off his throat. He would wake up and I would hear that cough in my sleep in the other room, and I would eject out of the bed to go pull his covers off of his bed so that I could get that, at least the comforter, off before he threw up. It's amazing how taking your tonsils and adenoids will stop some of that. But I didn't realize he had sleep apnea until one day I had recorded it, and Roger heard it. That was during the years that he was at the hospital, you know, every third night, all night. And when he wasn't, he was so exhausted, he didn't hear him snoring in there. And I recorded Caleb sleeping, and Roger heard it, and he said, "That's not normal." I said, "I don't think so." I said, "And him throwing up every third night's probably not normal either." And so anyway, we took him in, and he, sure enough, needed his tonsils and adenoids out. Two sets of sheets, you need it, so that you're not washing sheets in the middle of the night. Some of those things can make a difference for you. In bulk cooking, you know, when I was in Kentucky, I had a friend that she would do like Diane was saying yesterday, and when chicken was on sale, she'd buy chicken, or whatever was on sale, she would buy a couple of packages at that time and put it in the freezer. And I remember saying that when I had more money than that was in my envelope for that week of grocery, because we were barely eking by. And I know what it's like to have an envelope system, and at the end of the week, we didn't have money for milk, much less next week's meat. So I remember vowing that when I got to where I had enough money to buy what was on sale, that I was going to buy several in a row so that I didn't buy meat that wasn't on sale. So if you have a little bit of space in your budget, that can be a real savings. And as your kids learn to cook, handling raw chicken is not a good idea. That's just not safe. So for the children, but if you've already got it boiled and deboned, they can handle that, and they can make chicken and dumplings. They can make, you know, any number of dishes from chicken or cooked hamburger. So do like what she said yesterday, and go ahead and put that in the freezer, and it enables your children to do amazing things from a much earlier age than what you originally thought. So she had a lot of real nice tips and things to say. Read aloud. Have a basket for your books that you're currently, you know, working with, and a basket in every room for different age children that have books down. This is our daughter reading to some. Oh, look, it looks like it snowed out there. I don't think it is. Snow is a big deal. We get it every 3 or 4 years. Go outside and be with you. I forget. In the 3 days of summer, go outside. But whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. And do it as much as possible with a sense of joy. Because what's going to happen? Fear steals your joy. Chaos and clutter steals your joy. So ask God to show you ways of dealing with fear and with chaos. And when Satan says, "What were you thinking?" Say, "I was thinking I was going to obey God. That I'm going to walk in obedience. That I'm going to trust Him. That greater is He who is in me than he who is in the world. That He has given me these children. That He knows me. He knows my inadequacies. He knows my weaknesses. And He has declared me their mother. And He has given me the command to teach these children as they wake up and as we walk along the way and as they go to bed, that on the doorpost of my home, I'm going to put, as for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord." And then you trust Him for the results. I hope that something I've said has made some sense to you. Because, you know, I could teach you how to do a reading lesson. You know, you can do reading, you can do math, you can do geography. You can do those things. What I'm here to tell you is that you should. And that you need to just keep doing it in obedience, day in, day out. I don't want you to be frustrated that we haven't talked about the specifics. What I'm going to tell you is every day get up and be committed that we're going to do school. And when you're doing school and it's not working and you just are at your wit's end, then stop and say, you know, we're going to watch a movie this afternoon. Or we're going to go outside and we're going to play soccer or go to the ice rink and play hockey. We're going to do something because what we're going to do is still love each other and we're not going to kill each other today. So it can work. Give yourself a release valve in there. So be faithful, but sometimes being faithful means not killing each other today. And just, you know, in the end, they're going to be okay. They're just going to be okay. And if you're at a day where you're not okay, then do something different. Stop. We would stop and read a book a lot of times. And, you know, because at the time that I was at my wit's end, you might need to go out to lunch that day just to get in the car and go outside the house for a while. Give yourself some grace to do something different occasionally and to alter your schedule. But for the most part, every day you're going to get up and do school. And you're going to love people and serve people and cook supper and cook lunch. Or have them, you're going to provide lunch whether you cook it or not. You're going to still provide lunch. Let me pray for you. Father, I thank you for each woman in this room. And I pray, God, that your Spirit would communicate to their hearts that they can homeschool their children, that you are trustworthy with their lives, God, with their children, with their futures, with their relationship with their husband, with the job, with their health, with the fighting, God, that you can show them the solutions. We thank you that you are a God who sees, who hears our cry, and who provides our need. God, help us to believe that you are that God and to trust you each day with each child and with our own hearts, God, that you are sufficient and that we can trust you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for coming.
We hope you enjoyed this recording, which was sponsored by The Learning House. For more information on The Learning House, you can visit their website at learninghouse.ca.